I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Accompanying me in this liturgical season of Lent is the appropriately sorrowful Father Garrett Burns.
Hello.
And the adequately penitential Father Drew Hoffman.
Hello.
I was trying to be appropriately sorrowful with my hello.
It was like your normal voice. Yeah, that's what I experienced. Are you always appropriately sorrowful?
I think so.
Yeah, appropriately sorrowful. Which is I was trying to think when I wrote those up, is one more of a compliment than the appropriately sorrowful versus adequately penitential?
Adequately penitential. I like that, actually.
It sounds just bad, but in reality, I'm like, no, I'd be good with being adequately penitential.
I'm not overly penitential.
Well, today we are in the studio of, I'm betting this is one you guys are not familiar with, St. John Southworth. Have you ever heard of St. John Southworth?
I don't know who that is. He sounds like an English martyr.
Bingo. And super cool. I just recently learned of him. So he was ordained in 1618 in the time, you know, it was illegal to be a priest in England.
Pretty chill time in England, yeah. If I remember.
So he had to go to the continent, get ordained there, come back to England. He's working for 3 or 4 years, gets arrested for being a priest, sent to jail. James I's wife was a Catholic, so she pleaded on his behalf to get him set free. So he was sent to a jail in London, and basically for the next, 30, 40 years was on parole. So he was technically a prisoner, but he would go out in London, work, do Catholic priest stuff, and work among the poor. Well, in 1654, he was arrested a second time for being a priest. He was 62 years old at the time. And so they bring him up, which it was a treasonable offense, death penalty involved with it. And the judge says to him, there's not enough evidence here to prove you guilty. So if you just plead not guilty to being a priest, I can throw the whole case out. And he said, I can't do that. I am a priest. And he refused to plead not guilty. And so at 62 years old, he was hung, drawn, and quartered. And all he would have had to do was say not guilty.
Wow.
But he wouldn't deny it. And so afterwards, the ambassador of Spain bought his body back, had it sewn back together, shipped over back to his seminary back on the continent where it was laid to rest. There was a devotion to him there. And then in the 1700s, war was breaking out in that area. So they hid his body so it would not be desecrated during the war, and they lost it. They couldn't remember where, you know. In 1927, they were putting a highway through the old seminary buildings and were tearing down buildings, and they found his lead-lined coffin and sent him back to England. And so now he's entombed in the cathedral, the Catholic Cathedral of London, in the neighborhood that he worked at in the 1600s. 300 years later, comes back, honored as a saint. And just a super cool story. So they've got his body on full display. I mean, it's vested and everything in one of the side chapels at the Cathedral of London.
Right.
St. John of Southworth.
How much did they buy his body for? I'm interested in the economics of this.
Yeah, they have the exact amount on the sign. It was like 10 guineas or, you know, I don't actually know what that is.
That's a good price for a body.
I like to think of myself about a 6 guinea body.
Sure. 6 guinea body. Inflation has impacted that a lot. And
The reason I got to see his and learn his story, I'd never heard of him before either, but not too long ago as I was over for a little vacation in London, which was super cool, wonderful experience, the Catholic Cathedral there. If you're ever in London, go see the cathedral, Catholic Cathedral. It's amazing. But more exciting for me, and a highlight of the trip, is we did an hour and a half little side trip outside of London to Birmingham, and I went to the Cathedral of St. Chad, something I have always wanted to do.
Haven't we all?
Haven't we all? Actually, so the rector, the Monsignor there, told me, you're the first priest I have ever met named Chad.
Really?
They were both honored and a little baffled that I had come all that way to the Cathedral of St. Chad.
Frat bros aren't traditionally Catholic, so that makes sense.
Apparently not. Not a common name among the priesthood in England. But they rolled out the red carpet for us. They were super nice. Like, they took us down on a private tour into the basement where they've got all these treasures because, you know, Catholicism was illegal for so many years. They hid away some of the treasures. They've got them there. They brought out the portable relic for me to venerate. Originally, I was just going to concelebrate the parish mass with them there was the plan. But it, as it so happened, they had a funeral that day for a guy who was a descendant of the family who hid the body of St. Chad from the Protestants at the time. And then the family in the 1800s brought the body back out. It had been hidden in their private estate home above the master bed for 300, 400 years.
Wow.
And so he's one of the descendants of that. So they had, it was a big funeral because he's a big name in the Catholic community. So I couldn't celebrate that. But what that allowed me to do is that I just had a private mass later in the day at the high altar right below the relics of St. Chad. So it really was a beautiful, a powerful mass. It was so many graces, so many gifts in that moment. It was a highlight of the trip for me. It was awesome. And it's a beautiful cathedral. I was afraid I was going to get to St. Chad's and it was going to be an ugly, modern wreck.
Just the most bro cathedral ever.
Yeah, it is not. It was stunning. I sent Bishop some pictures, said, you know, if we ever think of a remodel or a renaming, I've got some ideas. He wasn't interested, but I, you know, plant the seed.
I really wish you would have been at the funeral, and because I just go around kind of, we want to thank all of our priests, you know, he's here from this guy, and this is a guy, his name's Chad. And
he's here for no other reason.
In my first mass pictures, there's like all these Wichita priests, and then there's Father Vincent, who's a great, but who was just like living at C's at the time, but I don't know Father Vincent. I don't know that I had ever met Father Vincent. So like all these priests that have been so impactful in my life. There's Vincent there too, which is great. That's more souls praying for me.
Every time I'm in those moments, I just envision myself waving to people like Forrest Gump from the boat when Lieutenant Dan shows up on the dock. There's that big, exuberant wave.
Hello.
So if you're ever in London or Birmingham and you're Catholic or your name is Chad or both, highly, highly recommend going to the Cathedral of St. Chad. Beautiful, great place to do a holy hour.
Okay,
so
if you need to do a holy hour,
when in Birmingham,
jaunt over the pond. And
that was really probably one of my number one spots. As silly as it is, one of my number one spots that I wanted to make a pilgrimage, a prayerful to. So next is the Holy Land. It probably should have been reversed.
Have you never been to the Holy Land?
I've never been to the Holy Land. So that's my Holy Land and Fatima are my two big pilgrimage sites left that I want to see. But what about you guys? What's top of your list for religious pilgrimage after St. Chad?
Yeah, of course. St. Chad's one.
Number one.
So number two for me is probably Guadalupe in Mexico City.
You haven't been?
Haven't been.
Really? That surprises me. Yeah. I mean, because you've got the poncho and everything,
right? I have
the
poncho, so basically I get it. I don't think I'll be very impressed when I go there because I've got a poncho.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen it in the mirror.
Yeah, so just from, you know, serving the Hispanics and really growing in a devotion to her. And yeah, one of the books I read, maybe I've mentioned this before, but they referenced a Medjugorje visionary who said Mary appeared there and said to them that I'm here visiting in Medjugorje, but I live in Mexico. And just kind of like that sense of, and that's when you talk to the Mexicans, like that's the way they speak about it. Like she's alive there, you know, and just to be able to go and see that and experience that is definitely, yeah, top or number two on my list.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's not close. It's Guadalupe and it's everything.
And you haven't
been
to Guadalupe either.
No. It's Guadalupe and it's every, like, even on bucket lists in general of life, like not just pilgrimage sites.
Really?
It's number one by a long, long, long way. And someday. And we've both been to the Holy Land. We've both been to Rome. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, see, I've been to Guadalupe, but I haven't been to the Holy Land.
So someday, but same deal. She only gave her picture once. And there's only one image of her that is her from her. I've got Guadalupe. If you go to my office, there's Guadalupe everywhere. There's statues of Guadalupe. There's painting of Guadalupe, pictures. I've got the tilma hanging in my study, in my rectory. So someday.
Yeah, that just amazes me with as much as you guys have been involved with Hispanic ministry that you haven't been there. But I guess it hasn't been, Mexico hasn't in the last decade or so always been the best place for a travel destination.
I've been to the Mexico City airport because I had to fly through there to get home from El Salvador during the pandemic. And someone said to me, they're like, you could just maybe pop out and go see Guadalupe, couldn't you? I was like, I'm not leaving this airport. Yeah. We're getting home.
Yeah.
We don't know when our flight is going to leave. But so that's one by a long way. A really random one for me is Salerno, Italy.
Yeah.
That's where Gregory the VII is buried.
Okay.
And Gregory the Seventh was Pope in the like 11th century. And it's one of my favorite stories. He's one of my favorite saints, of standing up to Henry the Fourth, who was the emperor. And Gregory ends up dying in exile because he forgives Henry the Fourth, the Holy Roman Emperor, for betraying him, even though he knows he'll betray him again. But that's how the priesthood works. If a man asks for forgiveness and you think that he's penitential, that you have to give forgiveness, and then he used that against Gregory. So Gregory had to die in exile, and he's got like a little epitaph on his tomb that says, "I pursued justice and mercy, and so I die in exile." But then they say that from then on, for the next 1,000 years, everyone knew that popes could judge emperors. Even though Gregory lost that battle, the war, when John Paul II is condemning the Soviet Union, that authority has been for 1,000 years has been. So I've that's a very random one, but yeah. I love Gregory the Seventh. He's died. This great pope doesn't get to be buried in Rome, and I'd like to go say thank you to them.
One of my little random ones that, not top of the list, but it'd be cool to go similarly in Italy would be Turin, just because John Bosco was so impactful in my interest in the priesthood and what I thought I wanted to be. And I don't even know if there's much in Turin to John Bosco. I mean, because it's a big industrial city. Yeah. I don't know what they've got there. I've never really looked into it, but I'll tell people, I want to go to Turin. Oh, you want to go see the Shroud? Yeah, I probably should see that while I'm there. But really, it's just John Bosco. I want to go see his haunts.
Is the Last Supper in Turin?
It happened in Jerusalem, Drew.
Maybe that's wrong. I think the painting's in Turin for some reason. That may not be right.
The Michelangelo one, you mean? Or the...
Well, who drew? This is terrible.
The Da Vinci?
The Leonardo da Vinci. The Last Supper. I mean, the original Last Supper would be kind of sick to see.
Yeah.
Maybe. Huh? Turin.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know.
It's not an art. This is not an art podcast. This is a leisure podcast, a travel podcast.
Leisure podcast. I like that.
I would love to go to Calcutta too and see.
That would be pretty sweet.
Tomb and the mother house and everything would be. Yeah, just I think something you can hear about and read about, but until you just go and you sit in Calcutta, everything that mother said will have just even greater impact because you just got to see it to believe it, I would think.
I've heard from multiple people that world traveler, been to a lot of different places, that they experience no place of a greater culture shock than India.
Really?
Like compared to all the different countries, because it's just so unique in so many facets that is the biggest culture shock they've ever had is stepping into. We should have Bishop, because Bishop got to go to India and to go to her.
That'd be
too
cool to hear.
We should have him talk about that sometime.
A historian I like talks about that's the why Thomas had to go to India.
How's
because
that?
Thomas is the one who touches Jesus, who touches the wounds, who has physically felt the Lord. So he's the one sent to India, because even 2,000 years ago, that is a different place than the rest of the world. And so Thomas was the one needed in India. And the beauty and the magnificence and the incredibleness of the culture, but it's a different culture than just about anywhere else in the world. So Thomas was needed.
Yeah, I've never heard that take on it. That's kind of cool. Well, I don't know if you guys realize this, we are entering into what I would call the hand-wringing stage of discernment. In this time of year, this podcast should fall March 6th. And so, in the fall, you've got guys have been thinking about it for a while. They know what they want to do. Then around Christmas time, you guys got a little bit more sure of it. But really, the February, March, April are the guys that they've been thinking about it, but they're looking for every sign and they don't know what to do. And they're always the initial meetings that I have that happen between end of February, March, and April are always a little more angst-filled than the meetings I have in the fall. It's just kind of one of those funny cycles that things fall into. So we are in the hand-wringing stage of discernment for many people. Not everyone, but many guys. But one of the dangers that I see at guys in this stage or this time period is they are hyper-focused on deciding their vocation, where it's almost like they are looking behind every bush because somewhere there's going to be a Rosetta Stone that's going to tell them exactly what their life is. And if they just search enough spots and if they look into just enough detail, this is where they come in like, well, I saw so-and-so and I'd read the Gospel of John and then 30 minutes later I saw Father John. So I wonder if that's a sign that I'm supposed to be a priest. I'm like, no, that's not what that is. But you can find guys just getting super hyper focused on that. I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about, or if you've witnessed that yourself or seen that around places.
Probably not to the extent that you get a front row seat to all of that. But yeah, I mean, and it comes from a good place. There's a desire to do God's will, to know God's will. But when it becomes so pressure packed and you can't think about or do anything else, that's not the way the Lord invites and calls.
This is obviously on a much different scale, but focus missionaries go through the same thing during this time of year of... am I coming back next year? I know it's a different level, but it is the same thing of kind of what am I going to do with my life? Okay, if I don't do this, what am I going to do next? And there's that old saying, never tell the vocation director you're leaving seminary in February. So when is this coming out? Early March?
This will be, first. It's so March,
like, there's
6th.
Some freedom, you know, there's some freedom. The weather's getting a little better and things like that. There's this quote that I had up in my room in seminary from, I think it's Rainer Maria Rilke.
Who was it?
Yeah.
I thought you said cult. I was cult. Very confused.
It was a
for
very
saying.
Tasteful cult. Sorry. Don't knock it till you try it.
I'm just like, wow, you had a different seminary experience than I did.
But it's just this quote from this poet. It said, be patient with all that is unquiet in your heart and learn to love the questions themselves. Mm. Which I found very helpful this time of year, and I utilize with a lot of people going through this process. Okay, learn to love the questions themselves down here. And am I asking the right questions versus am I getting the answer? Okay, so what questions am I asking? Am I asking good questions, which isn't necessarily, should I be a priest or should I not? There are other bigger, perhaps, questions actually that need to be asked right now. And am I okay being in the tension of living in that space right now? Because there's a lot more Jesus wants to teach me than if he just handed me the answer right now.
Mm-hmm. And he wants to do it in the midst of life. I mean, that's the environment that we grew up, the people around us, our work and all of those things. And so then when we're hyper-focused, we miss all of the things that are really going on around us, which are the tools the Lord teaches us anyways. It kind of reminds me of, do you guys go to a chiropractor or is that an age thing?
No.
Okay.
I did for a little bit.
Okay.
I made a dumb decision during college ministry trying to do something I was too old to do.
Tried to put the team on my back.
That's what I did. I put the campus minister on my back and I squatted him like to get people hyped. And the campus minister at K-State was a bigger dude. And I had to go to the chiropractor and I only stopped because the pandemic started. And so he kind of closed down. But so I'm a chiropractor.
Okay.
Guy.
Okay. Well, so some young people may not get this analogy I'm about to make. I grew up with my grandfather was a chiropractor. And so even as kids, we'd go in and get adjustments, which I thought was normal. Turns out it's not. But most chiropractors.
As a kid, you would go in for an adjustment?
Yeah.
How much can be wrong with your back at 11?
I did a lot of dumb things at 11.
That actually makes sense.
But I have a life history of that. But it's a general thing, like, you know, a lot of times the chiropractors, they'll, you know, snap your neck or pop your back or whatever you want to call it. But especially like as a kid, you'd know this was coming. It's almost a little frightening thing and you tense up and you get really tense. And even adults will do this and the chiropractors will tell you, no, you have to relax and they'll give you like a breathing technique or get you to start talking or counting. But because you're anticipating it, you're tensing it up so much, you prevent it from happening. You got to relax and let the chiropractor come in. Well, it's somewhat similar with a vocation. You got to let the divine chiropractor come in. And if you're super hyper focused and tense, you're not actually allowing him to work the way he wants to in your life. You got to take a breath. You got to step into your normal life and breathe. And then he can start setting the things of your life right and snapping your back.
Well, isn't that how homily prep works all the time?
Amen. That's a good point.
I'm in holy hour.
So true.
And I'm like, I need a homily. This isn't working. And so maybe I open up the spiritual book that I'm reading, or I'm sitting there for a little bit, or even I get out of holy hour. It's like, I got to
go for a walk.
And I get into the confession. I'm like, oh, bingo. That's exactly what I need to say.
That is so often happens. That's a great point.
And Chad, like you're saying, for me, it's usually like I had this conversation yesterday with somebody and that applies perfectly rather than just like sitting there like, I need to understand the scriptures perfectly so I can preach them. It's like, no, God spoke to you yesterday. There was this thing you read, something you watched on TV, some conversation you had, and that was this lesson that I want you to share with other people. So yeah, it's just living a relaxed and that trusting life. There's a lack of trust there when it's just like, I'm so tense and pressure packed. I need to figure it out. I need to decide. Like, I think that was even the way you put it to us. Like, hyper focused on deciding your vocation. Well, like again, you don't you don't decide your vocation, you receive it. So
yeah. And that's where sometimes it's helpful. I tell guys, okay, just you got to step back, and there is going to be some tension. That's okay. Not all tension is bad. Too much tension is a problem. But step back, and if you're getting hyper-focused, just simplify things. Spend time with the Lord. Do you like spending time with the Lord? Okay, that tells you something. Do some reading. Was that reading helpful? Okay, that tells you something. Go to Mass. Do you like going to Mass? Is the Eucharist nourishing? Do you want more of that in your life? Okay, all of those things are telling things. Step back, and at the risk of oversimplifying, just be with the Lord. And do you like being with him in that way? And then maybe I'm going to take a little bit step closer with, but kind of easing that tension, just spending time with the Lord and getting back to the basics of what is resonating inside of me. It's not the test where the Lord's going to ask you a question. You've got to do a 3-paragraph essay and explain everything that's going on with life. That's not how it works, but that's how it feels like when you're getting super hyper-focused.
I think it flips that a little bit. Obviously, the first universal call is to holiness, and so we need to be seeking that. And I guess most of these guys are, you know, but I thought of, like, if you're so hyper-focused on your vocation, you might even find it, but you might not be a good priest or a good father of a family if you spent so much time just figuring out this one thing that you forgot or didn't have time just to grow in holiness, to grow in conversation and compassion and virtue that... All right, congratulations, you figured it out. But maybe you're not going to be able to live it as fully because you excluded so many of these other things.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so rest seems, I mean, as we're recording this, yesterday was the creation story as our first reading. And I know that's a long way away now that we're doing this. But again, Jesus, God creates man in his image and his likeness. And then what's the first thing that he does? Takes the day off. And takes a breath and takes it. So, okay, I am made to look like God because I was made in his image and likeness. And that means a lot of things. It means to give myself away. It means to grow in holiness. It means a bunch of this stuff. But first things first, it meant to rest and it meant to be. And so that struck me in prayer yesterday, that's the initial reaction of the Lord. And so what's he asking me to do? Take a deep breath here. Take the day off. And in that, I actually look like God. And whenever I look like and act like God, good things, my life's going to make more sense. Decisions are going to occur.
I used to have a person in my life who would say to me all the time, God doesn't play games. And so if your discernment feels like a game, if the way you are discerning looks like it could be a page out of the National Treasure movie, like, okay, well, I found this clue and this leads to this clue. No, that's not how God does it. That's not how a healthy relationship forms. You wouldn't date someone because you're finding all these clues. Well, maybe this person, I mean, that's like junior high dating of, well, they punched me on the playground, so this must mean this. So I'm going to ask this friend about this. Well, that's not how a mature person approaches a relationship, but neither should it be with God. God's not playing games. He's inviting you in deeper relationship. Doesn't mean he's going to tell you everything at once. It doesn't mean that everything's going to be clear. Again, making that idol out of clarity. That's part of this. We've talked about that in the past. That's part of this being hyper-focused of this. I have to have everything lined out before I can take a step forward. No, sometimes you just take a risk in a relationship and say, Lord, I feel your pull. I feel something resonating. I don't know if this is what's going to happen next. I don't know all the plans of it, but I'm not going to treat this like a detective story. I'm going to treat this like a relationship, and I'm going to spend some time with you, and I'm going to step deeper into it.
And that's where this time thing can obviously harm that, but it happens to me with guys all the time who are discerning. And it's like, are you going to finish the school year? Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm going to finish school year. So no decisions need to be made right now? Well, no. Okay, so then let's put this on the back burner. And let's sit in the chapel and hang out. And again, this makes it a little different when I am maybe deciding whether to come back or not. So that can be a little difference. But if I've got time, take it. Yep. Take it. Enjoy the time. Because the Lord has given you perhaps that space just to be. And we'll re-examine it later on. But for now, I can just hang out with the Lord a little bit.
Yeah, I run in that with high school students a fair amount. You know, someone will come up to me like, Father, I don't know what I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be, I think, a priest, and what should I be doing? And first thing I'll ask, what year in school are you? I'm a sophomore. Okay, the first thing you do is breathe. You don't have to make a decision this year or even next year. Grow in holiness. Back to what your point, Garrett, of that's our primary vocation is to grow in that call to holiness, and the Lord will reveal it. But don't get yourself all worked up before you need to. Just breathe and take that time.
And I think a little bit of what we were talking about with Alexio last time of you got to let God surprise you a little bit.
Yeah.
And so if you're so a mystery novel or whatever, and it's just clue to clue to clue, like there's not enough good surprise there that you're allowing him. You're putting yourself out there. You're searching, you're putting your net out, you're going to prayer, you're doing the right things, but just let him surprise you. And then it'll be clear.
Yeah. Put out into the deep. Now I just, you think of that verse, John Paul II used to use that all the time of, what did Peter say? Like, Lord, we've been doing this all day. We haven't caught anything but at your word. And that's where kind of at vocation, when it's time to take a step forward is, okay, Peter didn't ask, well, how many fish do I need to go off the right side or the left side? How far out should we go into the sea and then put it? Because we've done it here and we didn't catch anything. So maybe we should go 10 feet further. No, the Lord just says, set out into the deep and cast your nets over, and that's enough. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's where the discernment's going to be, not this hyper-focused, all the details got to be there, that Lord, you're resonating in my presence, and I need to take another step forward. Well, thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. The final word today goes to Father Drew.
This was on our vocations poster a few years ago, and I always treasured it while I was in seminary. It's from Pope Francis. Ask Jesus what he wants from you and be brave.
See you next week.